From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Oh, hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever the cape wearing.
Polo wearing.
You're wearing shorts too, by the way.
Yes.
The heartthrob of Bob After Dark, a fashion icon in the occult world. My friend, my producer, my brother, Count Panic himself.
Well, hey there, Bob. And as things heat up, of course, got to bring out the polo and the shorts if you're watching there on the Jed TV or wherever you're watching from. Got to bring those out as well with the cape. And I'm sitting in some interesting lighting right now, and I think this really reflects the mood of the show as far as this lighting. It looks a little, what's the word I'm searching for, Bob?
What's the word?
Ambiance. But I feel like it fits the mood of the show today. So as always, we're trying to figure out ways to maybe perfect these camera angles and these lights. But
you know,
during the day it's tough, but at night it's kind of nice.
It is kind of nice. Yeah. These lights in the studio that are hanging above my head are never so, you know, nicely harsh, I guess. But it's nice to be back here. Nice to be in studio with you, Count Panic. And,
yeah, nice to be seen.
Yeah, I guess. You know, Count, because you are the fan favorite of the show, I feel true-heartedly that you are the fan favorite of the show. The show might be called Bob After Dark, but I think the fans really, really do adore you.
I feel like sometimes they
prefer you over me, which
no,
is fine.
Bob, I don't think that's true at all, Bob, but happy to be here, Bob.
So we need to get your weekend update.
Yes, the weekend was kind of eventful, Bob. Traveled around maybe Indiana a little bit there, down to Amish territory.
You went to Shipshawana?
Around that area, yes, Shipshawana, and of course the Amish still going strong. I didn't know this, Bob, but the Amish are big fans of Bob After Dark.
I
know what you're saying. Because
they do have some modern technology.
Radio.
They do have radio.
Listen,
I don't want this to be a bit. I
do have a story for you, though.
Okay, I do need to hear your story.
All right. Maybe not the Amish, but I got a story.
Just joking about the Amish
they are,
community.
No, but you know what? They are fans of Bob After Dark. But
okay,
I had
good.
A great time there in the Amish
Hello,
community.
Amish community. Oh, hey
yeah.
there, if you will.
Yeah, no. You know, the Amish do, you know, come on, the Amish do like the paranormal stuff as well.
Yeah.
But I went down there. They're still rocking and rolling in Amish territory, so it was good to see that.
Sure.
But I did get this email. Other than that, the weekend was pretty good. Again, kind of getting out there in the country air, you know, breathing the fresh air. It's a lot fresher than here in the region, the Chicagoland area, northwest Indiana. So it was nice to get out once in a while past a certain limit and take in what they have to experience. I had some business to take care of down there. Not Amish business, but some business, and it was really cool to be out there. And it's been a while since I've been in Amish territory. Did you know? I didn't notice, Bob, because they still have the horses and the buggies.
Yes.
But the buggies now, they have blinkers on them.
Sure. I mean, you gotta follow some sort of traffic stuff, because I know they get out on like the expressways, not the expressway, but the busier country roads where people drive. You gotta be safe with that kind of a thing.
And the horses, pretty fast as well.
Yeah, of course.
But also, I want to mention this, too, in there.
Uh-huh. Are you plugging something on the show?
We got this message.
Oh,
what's that?
Well, no, I was just cracking a joke.
No, I'm not plugging.
Are we trying to get the Amish community
no.
to sponsor? Amish community, if you're looking to sponsor a podcast.
Well, they could sponsor if they want to as
yeah.
well.
Okay, but, well, go on. Sorry,
got this email here.
Uh-huh.
From Sweden.
Sweden.
They were saying from Sweden. My name is Gote Lindstrom.
Hello, Gote Lindstrom.
Yeah, I am writing to report reception of your radio station, WJLB Hammond, Indiana, on 1230 AM. I listened to WJLB on February 12, 2021, from 1231 to 1232 AM, your local time here, Central Time. To prove that I have heard your station, I have made an MP3 recording of your program. On the recording, you can hear a commercial for Corrales Roofing and a promo for This is Bob Anderson, host of Bob After Dark, every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. So from Sweden, they heard promo of Bob After Dark.
I am extremely proud.
Yeah.
We are officially landed in Sweden. Oh, hey there, the Swedish country.
So of the 1 minute they heard of WJLB, it was a promo for Bob After Dark.
I'm assuming that they probably listened to an episode. I'm going to have to check out the...
I'm going to tell him. I'm going to email him back and say, hey, check out Bob After Dark. I'll send him the podcast link.
That's good.
I thought that was pretty cool, though.
That is great.
Yeah.
So, Sweden, if you're looking to sponsor a podcast and make my life grow and make me do this for my full-time job, you know where to find me.
There you go.
You know, we could be big in Sweden, right?
You know what, Bob? You could be big anywhere.
So, real quick, and then we'll get on my weekend update and we'll move on to the show. You know, every week, I should be checking this more often, and then Pat somewhere out there is yelling at me about checking my demographics, but I check my demographics once a week. And, you know, if I find something that's unique in where somebody's listening from, I have to say it's pretty fascinating stuff to find the show. Because the show obviously is going to be big in the Chicagoland area, right? Because that's where I'm from and, you know, that's where the fans are. But I travel to conventions a lot and we're an internationally, broadcasted thing. We're featured on India's biggest podcast provider and China's biggest podcast provider. So we're international. However, I did find that we have several thousand downloads from a certain place called Costa Rica.
Hmm.
So to Costa Rica, thank you for being fans of
Costa Rica.
Thank you for being fans of Bob After Dark.
Sweden and Costa Rica.
That's the true-hearted statement. I found out we have fans in Costa Rica.
That's
so
nice,
hello,
Bob.
Costa Rica.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give a hello to you.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a new segment on the show. I'm going to find a random demographic that I didn't realize listened to the show, and I'm going to be like, oh, hey there, fill in the blank.
Just throw a dart at the board and see what happens. So, Bob, yeah. Coast to Coast. No, wait, we can't say Coast to Coast. That's the actual name of the show, but truly Coast to Coast, Bob. Truly Coast to Coast.
You know, that's the mother show. George Norrie might come here and try to beat me up because we're taking the name.
He'll be on soon enough here, Bob.
Yes. You know, if we can get George, if you're listening to this, I would love to have you on my show.
Yeah. I'm sure he's listening out there somewhere, Bob. Bob, I got to ask you, though, how was your weekend?
The weekend was good. Day job stuff for Saturday. Sunday had to do some maintenance on some car stuff and then mowed the lawn.
Oh.
But most importantly, and this is my exciting stuff, is conventions are opening back up. So hopefully within the next 6 to 8 months, we'll be back on the road. And, you know, applying for conventions has never felt any better. I am so excited to be back in the saddle again. And,
yeah.
You know, sending out a proposal to a non-virtual convention was super strange. So hopefully we'll be back very, very soon to the convention world and my life and your life will go back to normal.
Yeah, you know, Bob, things are starting to open up a little bit more. People going back out and they're in the public.
Yep.
So cons may be a thing in our soon future here, Bob.
Absolutely. All right. If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly show about legends, lore, and the supernatural. Things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid sightings, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite kind of cheese curd.
I love cheese curds, Bob.
You do love cheese curds, but you like those weird flavored
ones. Weird flavors. From time to time, I like to branch out and maybe get a flavored cheese curd, jalapeno or buffalo
just
style.
A regular.
Garlic.
We've heard from the Wisconsinites.
Yeah.
That it's just cheese, just breading, and your choice of dipping sauce of ranch or marinara or apparently lemon zest. Oh. Queen of Night and I went to a fish fry in Kenosha, Wisconsin over the weekend, and they had lemons with the cheese curds in it.
Why not?
It wasn't a terrible thing.
Gotta be adventurous in life, Bob.
I would say so.
Yeah.
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 Anyway. So the show's divided up into a few segments, folks, and I know we talk about this every week that we're leading up to a brand split, if you will, when it comes to the podcast version. I'm just still figuring out logistics. It's not easy being the one-man editing team that I am. But so very soon we're going to be splitting up the show into two uploads. I know I keep saying that, but it's going to happen. So top of the week, you guys are going to get the weird spooky news of the week. That is where me and Count Panic dig the internet and dig the world for weird spooky news that is anything paranormal that's making it to major news light, which apparently that's been a thing over the past couple days. Weird advances in science that borderline on science fiction and just the general oddity that is the universe. And then we dive right into the lore of the week. That is where you get to hear a weird story. Not weird, but just a typical paranormal story.
Yeah.
Read by yours truly.
How about and that? Can't beat that.
All throughout the while, you can get the hashtag Panic's Take. That's where my producer, Count Panic, who typically knows little to nothing about our topic for the week, gets to chime in once in a while and give us his raw 100% opinion on certain topics.
I have no clue what you're going to bring up right now, Bob.
Two things, actually. Folks, our email system is about to be re-back open. The normal email, bob@bobafterdark.com. So when that's open, I want to hear your paranormal experiences. Reach out to us, bob@bobafterdark.com. I will let you know 100% when to do that. The hotline's being retooled, so we're going to have the Bob After Dark hotline open where you can call and leave a message from wherever you are in the world and tell us about your weird experiences. And, of course, you can always slide into our email, our social medias, at Bob After Dark on Instagram and Bob After Dark Facebook. Make sure you go and like and follow both. We almost broke a big threshold in the world of our Facebook. We almost hit 2,000 organic likes.
Very soon, Bob.
That's incredible. I just want you guys to know that Facebook does not make it easy for us with the algorithms, especially if you're not paying an arm and a leg for advertising space. And it's really amazing to know that we gathered 2,000 organic likes on there. That's pretty incredible. So if we can break that 2,000 likes, I will, I'll do a jig.
You'll buy everybody cheese curds.
I will. And then we're launching the TikTok here soon. we're getting hip on here, Cal Panic. All right, you ready to hear some weird spooky news of the week?
Sure, Bob. Hit me with it.
All right. Where do you want? You want to talk about something that's been blowing up my inbox for the past couple days?
What's been blowing up your inbox?
So apparently there's more places out there in the world that you can listen to your news from other than Bob After Dark, and one of those is a little show, maybe you've heard of it, called 60 Minutes.
Ah, yes.
Have you heard of 60 Minutes?
I heard of 60 Minutes, Bob.
Well, 60 Minutes just had an amazing episode on over the weekend that was talking about extraterrestrials. And the fact that it's making it to, you know, major news outlets, I'm going to share the article from our favorite friend Tim Banal from Coast to Coast. I'm going to read the article word from word. News program 60 Minutes devoted a segment portion of Sunday night's broadcast to exploring incidents of Navy pilots witnessing unidentified aerial phenomena and the United States government's recent acknowledgement of the issue. Amazingly, the near 15-minute long segment, which can be seen in a YouTube video, which I'm going to post so you guys can check that out, was actually the first time the program has ever covered UFOs in more than the five decades that 60 Minutes has been on air. The piece largely served as an explainer to the 60 Minutes audience, who may have been unaware of the remarkable series of UFO-related events that have been folding since late 2017, New York Times article that revealed a Pentagon program to study unidentified aerial phenomena, which is what I guess we're going to be changing the word UFO to very soon, the UAP.
UAP.
UAP. Yeah. During the segment, reporter Bill Whitaker spoke to former military intelligence officer Louis Elsmondo and former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence Christopher Mellon about their concerns regarding of what they see the government's unwillingness to take a critical look at the UAP issue and how they have been working to rectify that situation. Also interviewed were the former Navy pilots Lieutenant Ryan Graves and Alex Dietrich, as well as retired U.S. Navy pilot commander David Favreau. Apologies, folks. All three of former pilots recounted their personal experiences witnessing unidentified aerial phenomena, and Graves making the eyebrow-raising statement that he saw UAPs, quote, every day for at least a couple years, end quote. While UFO enthusiasts may have found the most material in this segment to be a rethread of information that has already been circulating in bits and pieces over the last 3 years, the show undoubtedly brought a sizable portion of the public up to speed on the matter, which is something of a victory for those wishing for the subject to be taken more seriously. On that note, one particularly telling aspect of the program was that, unlike in the vast majority of instances wherein the mainstream media looks at UFOs, the phenomenon was given a sincere examination rather than being the subject of ridicule. Additionally, it is noteworthy that not once during the segment were the words, quote, aliens or, quote, extraterrestrial uttered by anyone. On the contrary, while the possibility that UAPs could be otherworldly was somewhat alluded to, a scenario in which they are foreign craft was treated as equally plausible, because you have to. And ultimately, the general message imparted by the piece was that not seriously examining the phenomena due to its decades of proverbial baggage leaves the United States vulnerable to whatever dangers these oddities may pose. This point was stressed by Senator Marco Rubio, who appeared during the piece and declared that, and I quote, anything that enters an airspace that's not supposed to be there is a threat, end quote. The senator went on to call for a process analyzing of the data from the UAP reports by pilots and argued that there needs to be a place where this is categorized, cataloged, and constantly analyzed until we get some answers. Hunt is correct. Count panic.
Hey.
What do you think? Hashtag panic's take.
Well, that's what we've been discussing here, Bob. In 2021, it's not a dirty word. UFO is not a dirty word, although they're changing it right now to UAP? UAP? Is that what
UAP is, seems to be the common accepted amongst the government type, at least.
All right.
Yeah, so the UAP is what they want to refer to it as, not a UFO
do you think
just
they,
yet.
But do you think they want to say that because they think UFO sounds a little too out there? No pun intended, out there.
No,
but
doo-doo-tsh.
Yeah, but UAP, maybe more of a scientific approach or more, you know, because when you say UFO, that UFOs are out there, people are going to start to panic, right? But UAP, when you say UAP, it has a little more subdued way of going about things where people don't get all excited about it. So I think that's why they're kind of switching things around with that. But yeah, it's what we've been reading about here, Bob. Of course, it's been a heck of a 2020, a heck of a 2021 so far. But the news of UFOs coming out, you know, we're not as maybe not talking about it as much as we should, but slowly but surely, Bob, more information is leaking out there.
This
to the public.
Is huge.
Yeah.
Like, you got to understand,
yeah.
Guys. This isn't like simple Bob After Dark, you know, AM talk show, FM talk show host rambling on about the UFO conspiracy.
National news.
It's not even a conspiracy anymore. We're pretty much just being spoon-fed that these things are real. In my opinion, the obvious choice of not calling it a UFO, obviously there's some sort of, I don't want to say a romance to the word, but some sort of connotation to what it might be. So let's just change it to the UAP. And that can mean a lot of things, right? So if they come out and say a UFO, you're automatically going to start assuming extraterrestrials, right?
Yeah.
Now, this UAP thing, on the other hand, well, that could be a lot of things. That could, you know, be drones or something, right? So, I mean, you have to have some sort of, I guess, still doubt in the world about things because you kind of have to. And the fact that they avoided the term extraterrestrial or alien doesn't surprise me. Because the second you start doing that is the second that you pretty much just admit that it's all true. And then soon enough, you and I are dealing with Star Wars level nonsense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you bring up a great point, though. It's not just AM radio talk.
You
put on your national news, and there's stories about this in prime time. They're
exactly
talking
this. We're not, you know, these aren't just random stories that George Norrie or, you know, Arthur Bell were talking about in, you know, Coast to Coast over the years, or, you know, fill in the blank random conspiracy podcast or radio show. This is 60 Minutes, and that is a kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
It's actually a really big deal in the world of journalism. And the fact that they had some, like, legit, like, top-ranking officials coming out and saying that this is a thing, well, this is a thing.
Is it? Yeah.
So... Huh. That's pretty much where I'm at with it. It's, you know, the more and more we do the weird news stories of the week, they're always UFO based lately because it's kind of becoming mainstream news.
Yeah.
You know, in my prediction, and I say this, you know, every time we bring it up, that in a few years, the concept of UFOlogy, or, you know, if you study that sort of a thing, isn't going to be a pseudoscience anymore. It's going to be a legitimate scientific thing that people are studying, and the government's going to be pumping a lot of money into researching. Mm-hmm. Or if they haven't already, at least they'll be making it public that they're funding money into these kinds of things. It's a big deal, guys. Like, I, you know, this is the it blows my mind that it's not making bigger waves in the world. Or maybe people just accepted the fact that we're not alone.
The truth is out there.
I want to believe.
To infinity and beyond.
May the force be with you.
That.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah, sure. Okay, we'll stick with that. We could go here all night, Bob.
Absolutely.
Big news, though.
Big news. That's huge news. Yeah. All right, you ready to move on?
Sure.
All right, this one actually came to us from one of our fans, this next news story. And it's really nice when the fans find an article for us to share, because then that gives me less work to do. This one actually comes to us from Andy, a longtime fan of the show, and radio fan, actually. Which
a lot
is,
of radio fans.
A lot
there,
of radio
Bob.
Fans. Yeah, I got to remember we're a radio show, too. Mm. But the really exciting thing about this is, like, Andy shared this article, and, of course, it came from Coast to Coast. So, once again, I have to give credit to our old pal, Tim Benal. We're going to have to reach out to Tim and see if he wants to come on the show.
Tim Benal,
because we reread a lot of Tim Benal articles on the show. So, the story is, a massive mystery creature remains found on the floor of mystery creatures remains found on floor of the Mediterranean. Excuse me, I'm jumbling my words tonight. Watermelon.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Taking me back to my improv days, Count. Yeah. All right, a curious piece of footage from an underwater exploratory vehicle shows the massive remains of a mysterious sea creature that is yet to be identified. Paranormal researcher Deborah Hatswell reported we received the video from an unnamed oil and gas industry worker back in 2017 and has held on to the material until late last month when she posted it to YouTube. According to her source, the strange discovery occurred as a remote-operated vehicle was conducting a survey of the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea at a depth of approximately 2,700 feet, so it's pretty deep. During its examination of the sea, the submarine stumbled upon the puzzling remains, which appear to measure around 98 feet long and consists largely of a lengthy set of vertebrae. In the video, the operator of the vessel uses a remote control claw to reach out and grasp a piece of the skeleton, but the segment disintegrates into dust as soon as the slightest bit of pressure is placed on it. While one might suspect the remains are simply those of a whale, Hartswell dismissed that particular theory. The video was taken by professionals who work underwater in oceans all across the globe, she said. They whale bones and come across them from time to time. To that end, she noted that the spine of the whale spots three blades, which are 120 degrees apart, which is much different than the skeleton in a video. Adding another layer of the mystery of the creature, Hartswell indicated that the dimensions of the skeleton on the video does not fit well with the usual size of any sea life in the area. For his part, Hartswell's source for the video said that, quote, the bones could be very ancient, and observed that they look like they belong to some sort of serpent of some kind. Attempts by the paranormal researcher to connect the creature's remains to various type of marine life has been so far fallen short, given rise to speculation that perhaps the skeleton is something fantastic, such as Hereford, undiscovered sea serpent akin to the legendary Leviathan. Hmm. More skeptical-minded individuals, however, have basically said that the remains were that of a giant hammerhead shark. Hmm. Hashtag panda steak.
Well, think about this, Bob. How many creatures do you think live underneath the sea? We'll say the sea. How many creatures do you think? What would you estimate how many creatures live underneath the sea?
It's hard to say, because we haven't. That's like the one thing we haven't really discovered. You know, we know what space looks like. But
yeah.
We don't know what the bottom of the ocean looks like. We haven't really discovered anything down there yet.
So think about this, Bob. Lots of creatures down there. You don't know for sure what's going to be underneath there. So very well could be some kind of shark, or it could be something maybe a little more cryptid than that.
I won't go into it because I'll be here all night. But if these are the remains of a Leviathan,
yes,
causes for some serious problems.
Yes.
And if the Leviathan are real.
Now, of course, you know, I'm kind of hip with the sea cryptids, but none more terrifying than Nessie.
That's your favorite. Okay, Nessie or the Yule Cat, which is your favorite?
I gotta go with Yule Cat.
Oh, okay.
But Nessie is...
Don't tell Nessie, she'll know.
Nessie
she'll
is up
you.
There. But Nessie's all year round. Yule Cat only shows up in the wintertime, so gotta give love to Nessie, who is an all year around cryptid. So, yeah. But shout out to Nessie. But Bob, this could be anything, Bob. Think about
are
how
you,
many...
Are you taking the skeptical side
I'll
of
take
things.
The skeptical side of things here, Bob.
We don't know what it is. That's just the simple answer of it. And the fact that there is so much of the ocean undiscovered and unexplored, and we don't know exactly what's down there just yet.
Think about that.
That does give you some sort of, like, idea that this could be definitely some remains of something either A, that's been long dead, or B, something we haven't discovered yet, or C, it just happens to be a giant hammerhead shark. But, you know, Count Panic, I got to take the believer side on this.
Yeah.
I want to believe that it's something crazy. Something crazy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, time will tell, Bob.
Time will tell.
But even the lakes are terrifying as well. You ever just go to Lake Michigan, Bob, when it's nighttime and just stare out there?
Listen, I grew up on the coastline of Lake
Michigan.
You did. Right there, the Mahala Beach, 5 minutes away from the house.
But do you go out there and just stare deep into the lake?
I actually have a spot picked out where I used to go and do my thinking once upon a time ago, right on the beachfront. So, yes, I used to stare out at it often.
Terrifying.
It's calming.
Yeah, but it's also terrifying, Bob. I mean, think about being out there alone in the dark in the middle of the lake, middle of the ocean. Gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. That's just me, though, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, skeptics take.
Skeptic, yes.
All right. This next story, folks, I do not want to bring light of the story of the coronavirus. It's a global problem. It's been a global problem, and it's a serious, serious thing. However, there is a story revolving it where somebody believes that they can save the world by using bad spelling.
Okay.
A numerologist, Anad Rao, a stenographer and numerology hobbyist from Anantharam in India's Andhra Pradesh state, excuse me, folks, I apologize for that, believes that simply spelling COVID and Corona the wrong way may actually cure it.
What?
That's all the story I really have on it. I was going back and forth if I even wanted to cover it, but it's such a bizarre idea. This numerologist believes that spelling it C-A-R-O-N-A-A will actually derive energy from it to make it not as potent in the world.
What? Really?
That's
something.
That's something. folks, please, I'm not going to get on a high horse about, you know, what you're going to have to do with this stuff, but numerology can answer some things. There is a lot of bizarre turn of events when it comes to numerology, but I'm going probably not on this one. It's, you know, you heard a lot of things over the past year and a half about what the coronavirus is and what to do to cure it. This is the strangest answer I got to it.
But a lot of people do believe in this type of letters and numbers.
We'll be very kind about it. But it's, you know, because some people believe in these kind of things, and that's fine and dandy.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to touch base on this too much, but it was still so strange because this numerologist from India is spending a lot of money trying to pump out some, you know, publicity and pieces about it saying that this is what's going to end it. And numerology is a very interesting world. It really is. And it's really bizarre, some of the weird angles you could find from that. But this is the strangest.
Yeah, Bob. Well, we'll see what happens. Time will tell. Again, same with the with a lot of these stories, Bob. Time will tell. We may not know everything right now at the moment, but I think let the dust clear, some things settle themselves out, and we'll find out for sure. I mean, look how long it took us with the UFO stuff. Years, decades, ages, and now we're finally kind of starting to unearth a lot of that stuff. So give it some time, Bob. Give it some time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, Count Panic.
What's up?
You okay?
Yeah. Just adjusting my cape.
I was seeing you
crack my neck.
Crack your neck.
Yeah.
Now, folks, I got a couple of things I wanted to chat about before we take a break.
Sure.
One is make sure you guys, if you're watching this right now live and you haven't already, make sure you go like and follow the social medias, facebook.com/BobAfterDark, and on Instagram @BobAfterDark. And if you're listening to us in podcast land and you haven't done so already, make sure you follow the social media as well. And something we haven't had in a very long time, Count Panic, is a review.
Yes.
We haven't had a review in a hot minute.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. And Count Panic is thirsty.
I am thirsty.
Folks, I can't stress this enough. It's very important. If you got on over to the Apple Podcast world, you can leave us a review. A 5-star review, in fact.
5 stars.
5 stars. If you leave us a review on the Apple Podcast, it's the 5 stars, and we check them every week. I check them every day just about to see if something new comes up. But if you haven't done so already, get on there, leave your 5-star review, and Count Panic will toast you on the show.
Yes, just like this. Maybe not always with a small iced coffee from a business, but with something.
And you don't need to listen to us on Apple Podcasts to leave review on Apple Podcasts. All you got to do is have the account. Because there's lots of ways to listen to Bob After Dark in the podcast world, right?
Of course.
Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Upcast, Downcast, Meowcast.
Wow. Yellcast.
Podbean.
Podbean, yeah.
Podbean. We're on everything. We are pretty much on everything. Like I was saying earlier, we are on India's biggest podcasting server and also China's, which is pretty cool. So, I mean, you could find us literally anywhere in the world. But if you could just jump on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, I'd appreciate that.
For sure.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, and we'll toast, right?
We'll toast live on air. So make sure you guys get on over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review, please.
5 stars.
5 stars, or it doesn't count.
Yeah. It's relatively simple, Bob. It's 5-star review. Just go on there and hit the 5-star notification. And 5 stars means the best, right? Because I think people get confused sometimes.
Yeah, don't leave a 1-star review. I'll find you.
But they'll leave a good review, but it's 1 star. So I think people just get confused with that sometimes, Bob. But yes, 5-star review for sure. We will accept it.
Excellent. We also have a new phone line system, I think, set up in the studio, right? Or no, we just have a new clock.
That's just a clock, Bob.
What's our new phone system?
It's the doomsday clock.
Do we have a caller, by the way?
You know, we do. I didn't. You want to find out? Take it live
on
the air?
Let's take it live on air.
We'll take it live on the air, see who's
there.
Hold
on. Before your listener, you speak. It is 9:38 at night on a Tuesday. John, is this you?
Hey, am I live on the air, Bob?
John, you're live on the air. Hello, John.
Hey, I hope I'm not dead on the air, so am I okay?
Doo-doo-tsh, yeah. You're good to go, John. Welcome once again to Bob After Dark.
How you doing, Bob?
Oh, not too bad. John, a little sleepy today. That's why I'm stumbling over my words quite a bit here, but I think I'm still producing quality content.
Oh, definitely. I haven't seen anything ordinary that you're doing tonight, so.
Oh, well, thank you, John. Folks, if this is your first time ever listening to Bob After Dark, John is like the official unofficial member of the Bob After Dark team. If there is two things you can always can be ready for on Bob After Dark is, one, I'm going to mispronounce something very badly, and two, John will always call in every week. I think John has missed in our time of doing Bob After Dark, I think John has missed one episode, maybe two.
I think you're right about that, Bob.
That's yep. One or two, but John calls every week. So anyway, John, what's on your mind this week? Because you always come to me with good stuff.
Yeah, you know what, as it relates to account, you know, if account has a birthday, does he do anything unusual or out of the ordinary that you're aware of?
You know, that's kind of funny, and I got to pass this question over to somebody else because I think it's someone's birthday coming up here.
I think it's account's birthday tomorrow, Bob.
I believe it is.
Well, you know what? That's why I'm calling, to wish a happy birthday to the account and to let the people know out there that, whatever account gets for his birthday, send it to him. You know, what the heck.
Send it. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, Bob. We'll see you.
Thanks, John. You know, he ruined it. I was going to give you a whole spiel at the end of the show.
We don't need all that.
I got to have a spiel, man.
But I appreciate
it. It's always nice to see when one of the team gets older. You're, what, about 967?
I stopped counting back in the 1800s, Bob.
That's a long time.
Yeah. We're getting up there, Bob. We're getting up there. Well, you're not getting up there. You don't age. But, you know, I slowly but surely do. But, yes, Bob. The veil is at its thinnest.
No, it's not.
Well, for me, I guess. For some people around
Well,
here.
We'll get to the spiel later.
Sure.
But just everybody make sure you wish Count Panic a happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
He accepts cheese, sausage, and beer.
Yeah. Maybe not that order, but some general order of that. Appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Count, why don't we take a quick break?
Right now?
Right now.
Okay.
Folks, for our live audience, stick around. We'll be right back into our podcast fans. Stick around. You're about to hear words from a show that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Hey, true believers and new believers, this is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count.
Hey there, Bob.
What did you do during break?
Was searching for some birthday cake, Bob.
Yeah, unfortunately, commuting for work.
Not from you, Bob. Don't worry.
No. It's okay.
Yes. How about you, Bob?
What did I do during my break? I actually took up clogging.
Clogging?
Yeah, because I said if we got to the 2,000 likes on Facebook, I would do a jig.
Wait, we just hit it?
A dance, if you will.
Am I missing it? Did we hit it?
No, we did not.
We're so close.
I'm practicing because I have a feeling we're going to hit it maybe within the next month.
I'm going to check right now. So we're exactly teetering on the mark there, aren't we?
Where are we at? What's the exact number?
Well, the exact number, and I will tell you this right now. There's so much on Facebook. We're at a – well, see, if you count the followers, we're over 2,000 followers.
Yeah, but you can't count the follows because there's a lot of groups that do it.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I always didn't like that. I feel like they should be linked together somehow. But usually in general with these pages, the followers outweigh the likes. But we are at, 1,912 to be exact.
Likes.
Yes.
So that leaves us 88.
Yeah, could be done.
88 likes.
Could be done.
So before we dive into the lore of the week, folks, why don't you share the Facebook page with your friends? Tell them about a weekly show where one handsome host and one handsome producer and sometimes handsome guests come aboard and talk about the legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night and lights in the sky. Because, man, I feel like we need a win, Count Panic. We've had a long year.
Yes.
Things did not go expected for a lot of folk.
For everybody.
And I think we need a win. I think we need some positivity news. So, folks, make sure you jump on over and like that Facebook page. Because if we do, me and Count Panic will do some sort of jig.
TikTok.
Once we hit the 2,000 likes, we'll go over to the TikTok. And what's the popular TikToking dance?
I think the Macarena or something.
Is it the floss?
The floss.
Isn't that the dance the youth are doing these days?
I feel like that's even outdated now, Bob. I think we're too far behind here.
I think yours is, back in your day, was the waltz, right?
The waltz.
The waltz was like the big thing back in your day.
I think you're doing the polka on TikTok. The polka.
Can you polka?
You know, that's something. You know what? It should be my blood already. Shouldn't I know how to do that instinctively?
Somewhere your dad is screaming that, yes, you should probably.
Yeah,
I think both of our dads should. Both our dads are like, yeah, you should probably know that.
Can you take a polka class anywhere out here?
I could teach you.
You know how to polka.
I certainly do.
When's the last time you polka'd?
It's been a hot minute, but I totally can.
That should be a TikTok thing. Watch Bob polka.
Yeah, we're a paranormal show. I mean, I just taking a quick a quick second break to say, hey, guys, make sure you like the Facebook page.
Polish Disco Demon. That's, if he's good enough for him, it's good enough for you, too.
All right, let's move on.
All right.
All right. Count, where are we at right now?
Where are we at right now?
Yeah, geographically, oh. Where are we at?
About what part of the show are
what
we
part
at?
Of the show? What part of the show are we at? We got to get moving.
You
here.
Lost your track of time here.
No, I did. No, I got this nice clock here in front of me. It keeps me track of time.
Yes. It looks like it's like a bomb ready to go off, right?
It's like something like that. Yeah. Yeah, it's like somewhere out there, our director of operations is like, where's your time stamp?
It tells you everywhere. That clock has everything.
Anyway.
Where are we at, Bob?
Where are we at, Count Panic? In geographically, where
we're
are
in the
we
Midwest, Bob.
Okay, specific.
Chicagoland area, Hammond, Indiana, to be exact.
Okay, a little bit more general than Hammond.
Northwest Indiana.
A little bit more general.
Indiana. We're in Indiana, Bob.
Yes, we are. Yes. And so it's funny, right? When I was growing up, and especially when I was in college days, people would always ask me where I was from whenever I travel and do things, because I travel all over all the time, right? People always ask me where I'm from, and it's much easier to say I'm from Chicago versus Northwest Indiana.
Around the edge.
People don't get it, right? So you tell them I'm from the region, and they look at you like you're some sort of, you know, Wolverine creature, right?
Well, that's a funny thing, because when you say the region, too, people say, oh, doesn't everybody live in some kind of region? But this is the region,
yes. Right? But specifically, I always told people I was from Chicago. But now, as I've gotten older, I usually just refer to myself as an Indiana boy. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up. Yeah. I know my Indiana, and that's what it is. And then people look at me, and they're like, oh, did you grow up on a farm? No, I pretty much, and at that point, it's like, no, I pretty much grew up in Chicago because I could throw a rock in Chicago from my house. Literally. Not literally, but pretty close. So, what are a few things that come to mind when you think about the state of Indiana? Oh. Now, you guys could play the home game.
Wow. Okay, well, when I think of Indiana, I think of steel mills.
Uh-huh.
I think of sand dunes. I think of corn.
Corn's the big one.
But there's more than corn in Indiana, Bob.
Indiana Beach.
I just think of
Motor Speedway.
John Mellencamp. John Cougar and John Cougar Mellencamp. Three different people, I think.
I think they're the same person.
Oh, okay, Bob. But I think of him as well. I think of windmills. Giant windmills in the sky?
Just 65 south, right?
Yeah, but you know, you drive to Purdue, you'll see those windmills.
That's what I'm saying, 65
south.
Yeah.
Bob, that's a good chunk right there, I feel like. Right then and there, Bob. I feel like that's a lot of stuff we rolled off as far as what you think about when you think of the fine old state of Indiana.
The fine old state. The homeland of Bob After Dark.
Yes, I think of Bob After Dark.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I like to think about. Yeah. But deep down in Indiana, there lies some spookiness.
In Indiana. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Deep.
You follow me so far.
Okay. I follow.
Indiana is the home of several paranormal things that have happened over the years. Probably our most famous paranormal spot, and got to bring him up, our old pal Zach Bagans. Mm. Made a documentary about a little city called Gary, Indiana, actually not too far away from here, about the Demon House. That doc, I can't believe I'm plugging this. That documentary is available on Amazon for you to go check out. There's other weird paranormal things in Indiana that we're also famous for. Diana of the Dunes, the mysterious swimming ghost lady.
Yeah. That's a big one.
That is a big one. That's actually something my friends in the world of paranormal, when I bring up that I'm from Indiana, they're like, oh, Diana of the Dunes. And I'm like, yeah, it's not too far, actually. 35-40 minute drive. We got to go a little bit more south than that, right? A lot of our stories come up here from the region. So you got you got Rita Road and Diana of the Dunes. And the more south you go, there's different cryptid
Crown
sightings.
Point Jail.
The Crown Point Jail. But you got to go a little bit more south than that. And our state's capital is Indianapolis, and I hate to be giving you guys a
rocks?
Not geology. What's the word?
Geography.
Geography. Thank you. I hate to be the geography teacher, but the capital of Indiana is Indianapolis, and there are several things that Indianapolis is known for. One, the Circle City Ghostbusters. Hey, guys. I had to throw it out there. Jacob, Nick, Larry, and all my friends down there. Hello, everybody. The Indianapolis Speedway, which is where the Indianapolis 500 happened, and a certain haunted location.
In Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis. Now, Indianapolis actually has several paranormal spots, and I have seen several of them, and a couple times I've been down there when I've visited being a paranormal investigator. Our old pal, Jacob Bartlett, who is the vice president of the Circle City Ghostbusters, took me a couple years ago when I was at Gen Con. He took me on a little paranormal hike, and I got to go see several things. One of Indiana's most haunted cemeteries, where John Dillinger himself is supposedly buried. He has a marked grave, but we don't know what's down there.
Yeah, that's a weird thing.
The weird catacombs in Indianapolis, where there's literally a city under the city, and apparently there's some spooky tales that go on down there. The Slippery Noodle.
Slippery Noodle
is one of the most haunted restaurants in the world. That's John Dillinger's escape route into the underground caverns was in that restaurant.
Okay.
And there is a whole area where there was a shootout between Dillinger and the boys. But one of the other spots, and it's probably one of the most haunted houses in America, I would say. It's right here in the heartland of us, Indiana and Indianapolis. And that is the Hannah House.
The Hannah House.
The Hannah House.
The Hannah House.
The Hannah House. And that's what our topic is this week. And the reason why I'm talking about this episode, because as we are recording live, I'm actually going to the Hannah House this weekend.
Bob, you are going to be at the Hannah House?
I'm going to be at the Hannah House with the Northwest Indiana Paranormal Group. It was so nice enough to invite me down. Mask up. I'm going on an investigation because I miss it.
So
and it's a real kind of quiet area. There's not a lot of us going, so it's like I'm going to take advantage of this. I'm going on an investigation because I miss it so much.
So you're going to trek out there with Northwest Indiana Paranormal to see what you can find inside the Hannah House.
In the Hannah House. So this week's episode is my homecoming episode.
Oh.
My welcome back to Indiana episode. And quick shout out to our friends Pete and Northwest Indiana Paranormal.
Now, Bob.
Now, panic.
Companies. Things might get a little crazy down there. Are you prepared?
I'm always prepared.
I know you are. I'm just asking you.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
But what makes, and I'm sure you're going to get to this, what makes the Hannah House so special?
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Count Panic, because according to thehauntedhouses.com, the Hannah House is described as a stately red brick mansion perfectly suited for the Indiana State Legislator Alexander Hanna, who built this 24-room mansion that has two floors, an attic, and a basement, and a two-story kitchen wing.
Mm.
It is a two-and-a-half-story detached residence, a large block connected to a smaller two-story wing with a gallery. In the main house, ceilings are 14 feet high, and all the rooms have fireplaces. The fireplaces in the parlors and sitting room have their original Greek Revival mantles. The mansion was built in 1858, making it a pre-Civil War era Italianate style of architecture. Mr. Hanna chose this style after looking at the many trade publications and architectural guides, which were popular sources to study to decide what kind of forever home you wanted to build. The first floor features a wide central hall that runs through the main house and continues outside as the gallery to the north kitchen wing. There is a staircase in the gallery that leads up to the second floor of the kitchen wing. There is a small room, perhaps a nursery, and a large bedroom. In the main house, there are a customary four rooms, two parlors, and on one side of the main hallway and dining room and sitting room on the other side of the main hallway. The dining room connects to the kitchen wing, which has a pantry, kitchen, small hallway with three-run stair to the second floor. The second floor of the main house also has the main hall with four bedrooms and a sitting room of this main hall. Most rooms have their original Greek Revival fireplaces. Are you done with the geographical and the architecture side of things?
Yes, it all sounds right. Like a lovely place.
Lovelily haunted. Let's start with some history. Born in 1821, Alexander Hanna was raised in Wayne County, Indiana. He was apprenticed as a harness maker and started his own business making harnesses. Having an adventurous spirit, he decided to leave a successful business and head to California in 1850 to try his luck to find gold during the gold rush. Canadian made enough money prospecting to become a part owner of a barley and vegetable ranch in California for 5 years, learning how to grow food successfully. After he sold his interest in the ranch, he returned to Indiana, I don't know why, where he went to go work for the Indiana Central Railroad, where his father, Samuel, was the president. Alexander Hanna bought 240 acres from his father and also started farming as well, using the latest scientific techniques in agriculture. He raised animals and crops very successfully. On the land he bought his forever home, now known as the Hanna House, Alexander was very anti-slavery, so before the Civil War, Hanna hid runaway slaves in the mansion's basement until they can be moved to the next underground spot. After 51 years of being a bachelor, Alexander finally married the love of his life, Elizabeth Jackson, in 1872. To celebrate, he built a new addition that contained a smokehouse, washhouse, milk cooling room, summer kitchen, and servants' quarters. Man, you gotta marry yourself somebody like Alexander Hanna.
Real go-getter.
I'm going to marry this woman, and guess what? I'm going to build her a smokehouse, a washhouse, a milk cooling room, summer kitchen, and some extra quarters for the...
What can't he do?
Well, let's move on.
Oh.
Alexander Hanna lived a peaceful life here with his wife. And the tragedy that they got together was... The tragedy that they got through together was the miscarriage of their unborn child. According to Indianapolis psychic Lynn Dornwend, Mrs. Hanna had given birth to a stillborn child in the second-floor bedroom. A visit to the Crown Hill Cemetery, to where Alexander and Elizabeth Hanna are buried, found a small, unmarked, infant-sized gravestone in the family plot, with only a single date etched into the stone. Chin up, onward ever upward, the couple continued to entertain, participate in prominent civic events, and found other things to do, enjoying other experiences together. In his later years, Alexander was elected to the public office, such as serving the Indiana General Assembly, as well as serving at various times as postmaster, sheriff, and clerk to the circuit court. Elizabeth died in 1888, leaving Alexander to be a widower. After Alexander Hanna died in 1895, the Hanna House was put on the real estate market. After about 4 years on the market, a prosperous jewelry businessman, Roman Uller, bought the house and the 21 acres surrounding the property. Roman replaced the creaky old wooden front porch with a wider concrete one. Uller's daughter, Romania Uller Elder, and her husband and their family became the third owners of this lovely house and stayed there until 1962. In 1962, David Elder took the responsibility of caretaking for the place but didn't live there, and the mansion was vacant for at least 6 years, and the Elder family didn't want to sell their forever family home just yet. From 1968 to 1978, Mr. and Mrs. O'Brien moved into the mansion and opened an antique store in one part of it, and lived there part-time with other parts of the mansion. They are the ones who, well, guess what, first experienced some paranormal activity. Hanna House was listed in 1978 as a recognized historical landmark by the United States Department of Interior and also listed the National Register of Historic Places. Now this is where it gets a little spooky, folks. History part over. I feel like Pat from Ghostly. The spirits were inadvertently provoked in 1980 when the mansion went through its first venue, was first used as a venue for a haunted house-themed fundraiser. And the paranormal activity actually started to become real active. Apparently, the spirits did not like the fact that whatever's kicking around there was being used as a, you know, a haunted house. Since that time, the property has played host to news crews and psychics and paranormal professionals, about to be me here in a soon, and many who have reported unusual occurrences. The Hanna House until recently was the Hanna House Museum and was rented out for social events as well. When the owner responsible for its property recently died, everything closed once again, leaving the mansion to Mr. and Mrs. Hanna, who enjoy it in peace. Now, time for the spooky stuff.
Okay.
Mr. and Mrs. Hanna loved their forever home while alive and seemed to still love it as spirits. They loved having it all for themselves for 6 years. Besides loving their home, there were two instances of tragedy that happened in the mansion that could have caused the hauntings here as well. When a house is vacant for a time, the spirits who love this home can decide that the house belongs to them again, and it's hard to kind of share it with the living. Dutton House Shelburne Museum in Vermont before being moved to Shelburne Museum had been vacant for years, and a male spirit really dislikes tours coming through his home. These are some of the examples. Hampton Living Lilybridge House in Georgia. Spirits were not pleased when this long vacant house had been moved and renovated. Different nasty things that go on when, you know, you leave it to them and then all of a sudden you're about to just go move in and take back over. Slaves who wanted to escape their bonds on the Underground Railroad sometimes died on their way to freedom, unfortunately. And their spirits who died still hang out there hoping to get to Canada. Sorry. You're ready for me to go on?
Yeah, I am ready,
absolutely.
Bob.
My apologies on that, folks.
I like that. It's a dramatic pause. We call it.
I was trying to not cough. I had to cough.
Go ahead and take a sip of water. I'll take a sip with you, Bob. A clamped throat is what
you
had there.
Let's talk about some manifestations. Mm-hmm. David Elder was the first one to suspect the place was occupied with unseen residents as he took care of the house maintenance during those 6 years. The O'Brien family, who left the house from David Elder, were treated to a full treatment of occurring manifestations as well as seeing an apparition several times. Activity increased greatly after the O'Brien family moved inside and continued in 1972 when they finally accepted the spirits were already in the house, Mr. and Mrs. Alexander Hanna. Here's just some different notated things that have happened in the house over the years. Noises in the basement. While working about the mansion, doing various upkeep chores, Elder suddenly heard a terrific crash of breaking glass, like jars breaking into millions of pieces, resounding from the basement. Elder rushed down to the basement and, well, found nothing amiss at all. Elder then noticed that fruit jars were being stored in that area where the slaves were killed in the fire and were buried so many years ago. There was a fire at the Hanna House that unfortunately did kill some slaves at one point. Mrs. Hannah's specialties. She appeared to be living on the second floor. The spirit is talented in creating both awful and pleasant odors. The second floor bedroom where Mrs. Hannah gave birth to her stillborn baby was normally locked up for use of storage. However, it seems to be the center of supernatural activity. Occasionally, the horrid smell of rotting flesh emanates from this room, strong enough to gag the living and make them run to the outside. From the same room, sometimes other than that, the strong, sweet aroma of roses penetrates the air. Spoons have a tendency to fly across the room, and wall hangings would sometimes swing by themselves. Mr. O'Brien also witnessed the door of the attic open by itself after the handle deliberately turned by itself, and the door to this odor-emitting room freely swung open at will, even when the room had been securely locked. When a door did open up, other unexplainable manifestations happened. Disembodied voices have been heard. The living heard strange noises, footsteps of the unseen, mumbling voices, felt cold drafts, or in some cases a microclimate, in places where they had no sources for them, and saw other doors and windows open and close without help from the living. Despite the fact that the staircase leading to the second floor was always carpeted, the sound of footprints of varying loudness along with the rustling of clothes could be clearly heard. Sometimes you'll hear voices if you're trying to work on the house by an unseen supervisor. You might hear some screaming from areas or some distant disembodied voices saying things like, "You will not paint my house," or "If you're going to do that, do a good job painting my house." A painter who was hired to spruce up the place had an unnerving experience of having the door swing open and all and pictures slide from their mornings as he walked by. The painter had enough and fled from the house after a spoon that Mrs. O'Brien had put on a tray flew across the room. Because the original house painter fled, Mrs. O'Brien's son volunteered to finish the job. On his first night, he felt like he was being closely watched by an unseen presence, which was a very uncomfortable feeling. Alexander Hanna really enjoys the company of children. Unfortunately, him and his wife were not able to bear any. But it is said, on the second night of painting, Mrs. O'Brien's son brought his wife and two daughters to help keep him company, as well as help with the painting. While the three of them worked in the room, the youngest girl played on the stairs. They heard the little girl talking with someone and came out to investigate. She showed no fear and was talking to a grandfatherly type man, which she could see, but her family couldn't see. The rest of the family watched her carry on a conversation, mesmerized. And then the little girl said that Dad was climbing back up the stairs. Totally spooked, the family left the property immediately. The spirit of Alexander Hanna early one evening while the antique shop on the first floor was still open for business. Mrs. O'Brien looked toward the second floor and was startled to catch a glimpse of a man in a black suit who was walking across the upstairs hallway. Thinking that this might be a customer who wandered on to the second floor by mistake, she went upstairs toward him to guide him back down to the shop. And when she reached the top of the stairs, the man vanished into thin air. Mrs. O'Brien also saw a transparent apparition while standing on an archway of the stairs. He was wearing an old-fashioned black suit and had a mutton chop whiskers. And before Mr. O'Banion can reach him and Mrs. O'Banner can speak to him, the apparition just melted away. Loud groans from somewhere down the second floor hallway were heard by Mr. O'Banion one night as he was watching the TV in one of the upstairs bedrooms. Annoyed, Mr. O'Banion yelled down the hall, scolding the spirit to stop its belly aching and leave them in peace. From 1980 to 1982, the Hanna House was used as an annual haunted house project for the Indianapolis Jaycees. They would take their kids on a tour of the spooky old mansion with scary special effects added for entertainment. While taking a break from the project, the coordinator fellow workers were sitting in the summer kitchen, which was located right next to the staircase used by the servants to go up to the second floor many years ago. Suddenly, loud scratching noises can be heard within the staircase landing wall. Despite quickly moving to investigate, the source of the noise was never found. One evening, while listening to the spooky sounds coming from an installed stereo unit, the coordinator and a friend, who were the only ones in the mansion, were puzzled when the sound suddenly stopped. Investigating the trouble, they found that the on-and-off switch of the unit had been deliberately pushed to the off position. A while after restarting the unit again, the off switch was again activated. The only explanation is that some annoyed entity took matters into his or own hands and just to stop the noise. They really didn't like the music that these folks were playing. They're just like, cut that out, you know. There was several TV specials shot there, and one was in October 1981. A TV crew went to the Hanna House to film a segment on Jaycee's Haunted Halloween House. A cameraman stood in the dining room doorway, planning to get a shot of the room from that point. After he commented that it wouldn't be unnerving if the room's chandelier would start to swing, guess what? The chandelier started to swing in a 6-inch arc. After investigating, the swinging chandelier had no reasonable cause to do so. A psychic, Arlene Cunningham, was brought by the crew in the mansion on the same day. She said she felt cold spots and presence all around the house. At the end of filming the last shot, the cameraman who stood in the dining room doorway to film the host of the Halloween segment, who was standing in front of a propped-up coffin. Suddenly, a picture hanging on the wall above the coffin fell down with a crash. After seeing that the nail was still in it, in an upwards position, and the string in the back of the picture wasn't broken, it was deduced that something had deliberately lifted the picture off the nail and off the string. Some unseen entity was up to some old tricks, trying to scare the living and let them know that the spirits were still there. Various apparitions of slaves who have been still in hiding in the basement during the Underground Railroad can be still seen. Besides the O'Brien family, other owners and visitors to the Hanna House Museum have experienced the antics of Mr. and Mrs. Hanna. Film crews have also had paranormal experiences. Hard evidence has been caught by numerous paranormal investigator groups and psychics as well. The spirits of Mr. and Mrs. Hanna have accepted their roles of being spectral hosts who occasionally discipline the living visiting them. Now the question is it still haunted? Well, some people like to believe that yes. The apparition of Alexander Hanna and that of Elizabeth Hanna have both been spotted on the second floor. Various apparitions of the slaves have still been hiding secretly in the basement. The moving of objects and unaccountable sounds still occur from the front of the living quarters. And some say that Elizabeth Hanna is still working through her loss of her child with full support of her husband, Alexander. It may be easier for her to do so now that she has complete privacy with no one living in the house at the moment. And you can go book, you know, investigations here. They often, you know, Historical Society often does tours of these places. And again, folks, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to hauntedhouses.com for the help on the research on this project. You know, when you're reading these stories, it comes off that Alexander and his wife were very much like the husband and wife duo in Beetlejuice. They just wanted their house back.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. That is a typical Beetlejuice-type story there. But I didn't know there was a hauntedhouses.com, Bob. So this hauntedhouses.com directs you to all the haunted houses, I'm guessing, in the nation, at least?
The hauntedhouses.com is a nice directory of different haunted locations across the country. And they had the best write-up about the Hanna House, because a lot of it's really quick blurbs.
Yeah.
But this one had, like, a nice good history piece and everything. So, you know, I quoted a lot from them. So thanks to hauntedhouses.com for their writing there.
Of course.
You know, but I have a theory, right? And I have a belief system that if you're going to be sharing your residency with some sort of spirit and they're not bothering you, just let them be. They're not there to hurt you or harm you. Just, you know, in the same regard, they need to understand that there's new owners to the house and they're probably going to do something different to the house. And the fact that they're throwing spoons and paintings at, you know, people that are trying to do construction, well, doesn't surprise me. And the fact that you leave a house vacant for a very long time, a spirit can become very, very comfortable within the walls of their, you know, where they live, and that's the, you know, that's their house. And then all of a sudden you start doing haunted houses. It's like, no, you can leave.
It's time for them to get out then. Well, this, what you're talking about here, Bob, has all the makings of a traditional haunted house.
Absolutely.
I mean, things flying around, noises down the hall, doors shutting. This is your stereotypical haunted house here, Bob.
I would say so.
Yeah.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
And this one, you know, a lot of our stories we talk about are, you know, end in horrific tragedies or, you know, there's some sort of evil presence. This is just a classic husband and wife duo were still haunting the place. And
yeah.
They're just, you know, they're a little grumpy. So this is probably one of the more, I don't want to say heartwarming paranormal stories we talked about, but this one's probably one of the more tame. Instead of people getting scratched and beat up, it's like, I'm going to hit you with this spoon.
Yeah, yeah. So is this the, what technique, when you go there this weekend, what technique are you going to use when you go there this weekend?
I'm going to do a walkthrough with no equipment first. I got to get some pictures for the, you know, for social media. So I'll get some pictures of the house and everything. But I'm going to do a quick walkthrough and see if I can pick up on anything that might be kicking around there that I'm not seeing. Obviously, with my own natural eyes, and I got to see if I can pick up something from my other senses, right? So we're going to see if I can pick something up, and then when that's done, I'm going to, you know, conduct some experiments and see if I can talk to Alexander or his wife, perform some, you know, spirit box stuff, you know, general paranormal investigation kind of deals.
Will you be taking some spoons with you?
I may, in fact, bring a spoon and see if I can get his wife to throw it at
me. You never know, Bob.
So that's what we call a trigger object.
Yes.
In the paranormal community. So I'm definitely going to have a spoon with me and see if I can get her to kind of interact with the spoon.
Yeah, spoon is a safe one. You don't want a fork or knife flying around there, Bob.
No, and maybe that's why she whips the spoons.
Yeah, because spoons are a little safer.
You know, but one of the big stories is that room, you know, sometimes you're going to smell rotted flesh. Sometimes you're going to smell roses. I guess it depends on her mood.
Mm.
So we'll see what happens there. Maybe I'll get the roses.
Hopefully you get the roses.
You know, I won't toot my own horn, but I consider myself quite the charmer, if you will, sometimes.
Regular Don Juan.
Jeez. So I'm going to see if I can maybe get the rose smell instead of the rotted flesh so we can have a good investigation. Because, man, I'm sensitive to smells, so maybe we'll get a good investigation and she won't be too grumpy. But, you know, this isn't one of those investigations where I'm going on it to be afraid, I guess. And
yes.
I'm not going on it, you know, this is kind of like what we did at WJOB, where it's kind of like,
welcome.
Let me, you know, I'm welcoming to what's there. I'm not looking to do any sort of, you know, spiritual warfare. I'm not, you know, I'm not there to kick something out because I'm not. That's not what I'm there to do. You know, it's not where I'm going into it feeling like I'm going to be threatened. This is one of those places where it's, I'm interested to see if I can communicate with a couple that's still hanging out. A true romantic story that love knows no bounds, has no beginning and end date, or I guess it has a beginning date, but it has no end date, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's just a classic love story. You know, you love each other, you're going to hang out in your house even after you die.
And both spirits are reported, as you mentioned, reported to be there.
Yes, that's predominantly who's there, and then there are, you know, the story of the tragic slaves that, you know, yeah. were there, and they're, you know, some of them might still be hanging out in the basement hiding. And then I did say there was not too much report about it, but there was some sort of fire that did kill some of them. Yeah. So that might be a little bit more on the restless spirit side. So we'll go down there and see if we can pick something up.
Do you think it's interesting to think about when these haunted places, take this haunted home, for example, when they know these investigators are coming into the home, you think they kind of plan it out? Like, and we'll talk about the couple here. Do you think they got to go back and forth? Like, hey, what should we do here? Do you think we should throw the spoon at this point? Do you think, like, do you think they plan it out? How? It's interesting to think about. Like, what? When do they feel like they want to make their presence known, Bob? That's always the thing that gets to me.
I don't know. Spirit's going to do what they want to do when they want to do it. You know, sometimes, like, you know, somebody can antagonize a reaction. Sometimes you might try to really push for a response. But most of the time, if they're tired or, you know, their energy is spent, you might not get anything, or they're just going to kind of interact with you when they want to. I'm not a kid, so I'm probably, you know, I'm not going to have some guy trying to come and hang out with me and say, hey, you want to play some hopscotch.
Also, yeah. Another thing, too, is like nobody, you got these video or EV, the voice recognition devices, and there's always some kind of maybe muffled words in there.
Sure.
Or so much. Never the traditional, ooh.
Listen, if there was a traditional ghost that I'm ever going to come across, it's probably these two. Because, you know, Hannah House has been investigated a lot over the years, right? It is kind of a hot spot for the paranormal community. A lot of people go there. So it's not like it's a, it's not like it's, you know, they're going to be unfamiliar with what we're bringing. They're going to be fully aware of what we're doing there. You know, sometimes you go to, like, the best places to go and investigate. This is just a quick tip for our ghoul scouts out there that are looking to get into the paranormal investigations. Mm-hmm. The best reactions sometimes are when you go to places that have never been investigated for, because things that are there have never seen what you're bringing, and they're going to be a little bit more curious.
Or you bring, like, something. WGOB.
Yeah, whoever's hanging out over there.
Because they're not used to investigations or anything like that over
creatures
there.
Creatures are just hanging out and being like, hey, what's up? What you doing
that was
over there?
One of the first of its kind. But you're talking about places that normally have this kind
of
action.
Yeah, so the husband and wife duo here are probably well aware of what we're going to be doing there. The second we walk through that door, and they're either going to be tired of our crap real quick, or they might play along. I'm going to have to lay down the ye old Bob Anderson charm.
But don't you just want, just once, Bob, you're all there in a room gathered together. Then from down the hall, you hear,
That might be him. He might do it just to screw with me.
Just a traditional ghost sound, you know?
Alexander might be that traditional ghost of just being like, hey, what's up, you know?
Yeah, I just
want to let's give them what they want. Let me pound on the door a little bit.
1920s ghost sounds is what I want to hear.
I'll set you up with one of those stock records.
Yes.
The haunted house stock records.
That's all you need to convince me that the place is haunted is the 1920 ghostly chains in the background clinking around and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
But, well, Bob, you're gearing up for a fantastic weekend here.
I am. I'm looking forward to it. Folks, I'll be doing some live broadcasts from the Hannah House, assuming I have reception for it. If not, I'll be getting some video and photo footage of everything while we're there. So stick around and make sure you guys see as much as we can of that.
Now, you're not spending the night at the house, are you?
No. We're getting there at like 7 p.m. and leaving at like 3.
Okay.
So it's not an all-night thing.
Yeah.
However, real quick, I don't know if you saw the pictures from Pete's most recent investigation. Dude slept in a room full of dolls.
Yes.
I checked. Absolutely not. All right? If I walk into that Hannah house and there's a room full of dolls. Do you know where I'm going? Away from the room full of dolls.
Yeah. And but the people that stay overnight in these haunted places, I feel like there's not much sleeping going on. How can you sleep when you're in a haunted house?
I'm going to be completely honest with you. In all my years of investigative work and research and stuff, I have never actually done one of those, like, lock-ins where you stay the night and you try to get some sleep on, like, a cot or something. I know jails do a lot of, like, that's a popular one. Like, you stay the night in the haunted jail, right? I've never done that.
Sleep, though.
Because I get grumpy without sleep. That's a fact. I need some sort of beauty sleep. And so I've never done one. I would like to. That's more of a question for the NWI paranormal folk, because I know they do those shut-in challenges often.
But I mean, it's hard enough to sleep when you're in maybe a hotel or somewhere else you're not used to sleeping, but to sleep in a haunted place when, you know, at any moment something could happen, I don't know, it just doesn't sit right with me, Bob.
No, it doesn't?
No. It doesn't.
Count, we're going to get ourselves, we're going to go stay at the Congress Hotel.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? How much is it to stay a night there?
Oh, it ain't cheap.
No?
No, that place is not a cheap
place. And there's one specific room that you got to stay in, right?
The whole place is a cesspool of paranormal activity.
I thought there's one room in particular that people would like to go for.
A topic for a future episode.
Okay, well.
Count Panic.
Yeah, Bob.
You have any final words?
Bob, as the count gets older, the count gets a little wiser. Tomorrow's a brand new day, and I'll be another century older tomorrow, Bob.
Oh.
Yeah. The big... How old am I now?
975.
5,000 centuries old or something like that.
All right, because I don't want to get copyright stricken, because you totally can, apparently, because it's still not up for... what's the term, count, when you use something the public domain?
Public domain.
I can't sing a certain song.
Oh, that song.
So instead, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, which nobody can deny.
There you go.
Which nobody can deny. Which nobody can deny. I can't sing the happy birthday song because I'll get copyright stricken. So instead, I just want to wish you a happy birthday, Count Panic.
Well, thank you, Bob. That was beautiful. Is that why they always sing Jolly Goodfellow?
Something else, always, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole story for another time, that it literally is copyright nightmare.
Hmm.
I think it's going in the public domain very soon.
I mean, how old is Happy Birthday?
It's a very old song. There's nothing paranormal about it, so we'll skip that for Bob.
I bet you, though, it has some... I mean, if you go into some of these homes, maybe you could hear it lingering in the background, this song.
No, because I can't play.
No, I know. But
then I get sued.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay, but do you have any words about the house here?
Bob, I wish you luck. I wish Northwest Indiana Paranormal, that whole crew, some good luck. Hopefully have some good investigations going on.
I'm looking
on
forward to being there.
Yeah.
On behalf of myself and Count Panic, I just wanted to say thank you all for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. I want to wish all of you a good night. To Mom and Dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.